What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution Podcast. We're back live with Whiskey Wednesday, my main man, Jake, behind the scenes with making sure that you guys can hear us and see us. I've got Josh in South Carolina joining us about all of our hot topics. Those of you that are new to these episodes of the Vacation Rental Revolution Podcast, we have two episodes every single week. Wednesday, we talk about hot topics that affect our short-term rental investing journey. We look and scour the internet, the news, see what people are talking about, how it affects us when it comes to regulations, taxes, economy, anything that's going on in the short-term rental world that affect us as investors. We try to talk about that on these live shows on Wednesday. You guys can always message us since it is live. Jake is going to see you in the chat on whatever platform you're watching, listening on. And if you have those questions, he will interrupt us. So send in those questions on and take advantage of being on the live show. On Fridays, we have Experts Corner where we bring in short-term rental investors, sharing the good, the bad, the ugly. So join us on Fridays for those interviews with some of these investors that are navigating the world of short-term rental investing and sharing what's working, what's not working, double down on what's working, eliminate what's not, and so that you walk into this game with your eyes wide open. That's our goal here at the Vacation Rental Revolution Podcast and at Bodicy. And so we're going to always start off with a few things. We have a lot of shout-outs today, Jake, huh? We've got one, two, three, four, five shout outs. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to shout out some successful investors that are making some nice moves. We're going to talk about the new capital gains and inflation adjusted tax that Trump started floating around as, anytime you're coming up on midterms, they start talking about all kinds of stuff. And keep in mind, this is not even legislation that's on the docket yet. But some things that people are talking about, I'll give you my take on that. We've got some data showing that Airbnb is suggesting that fall is going to be very good for short-term rental owners. It says that fall is about to explode. We'll talk about some of that. Regulation hikes being out and tax hikes are in. We're starting to see this across some markets. We'll talk a little bit about that. We're going to go to Josh. You and I will debate a little bit on photos in your OTA listing. And I think that will probably wrap it up. We'll see how far we get with all those topics. Jake has some other stuff, but you know what? It's going to be a good day today, Jake. And I'm not going to talk about U.S. debt. I'm not going to talk about, the shooting that happened in Seattle. And so I'm axing some of Jake's topics because I want to have a positive day today, Jake. So Jake has some topics that are a little on the negative side. So we're not going to do that today. So we're going to keep going. So shout outs. This is a fun way to positively start the day. Wes Connell launched a property, top floor property in Tampa, Florida. Absolutely crushing it. His actual quotes from his February start through today. Occupancy is he expected 68%. He's sitting at 77%. He underwrite $191 a night. He's sitting at $390 a night. Wow, that's massive. It's a double. Expected and underwrote his RevPAR. The RevPAR in the market is 130. His RevPAR is 300. So expected revenue is 48K. Actual revenue only halfway through the year, 6.5 months in, is 58K. So awesome job, Wes. Appreciate you sharing the numbers as well. It's really fun to, see the successes. And just so you guys know, we always in the show notes, we'll post these all links to all of these shout out properties. So you can go check them out. Ivan Machado said his speakeasy style property in Albrightsville, Pennsylvania. We've been watching this. He just got the top 1% tag on Airbnb. Launched property 5 months ago, flew it to the top and doing really, really well. So we'll go check out, you guys go check out that. I always suggest you wish list these types of properties. And so if you're ever in the area, go check them out also. And then Dan Gorman and Claudia down in Tampa had, they've got two more of their properties have received the new Airbnb Lux tag. They've got Waterside Gardens, Riverbend Escape, and now 1906 Tampa. They're actually evaluating his fourth property down there. So we're crossing our fingers you get it. I will be no surprise here if you do get it. There are only 5 properties in all of Tampa with the Lux tag. Dan and Claudia have 3 out of the 5. So congrats on that. It's a pretty amazing accomplishment there. Aaron Fitzpatrick just launched down in Kissimmee, Florida with the Vodicy design, revamped this property, got a relaunch, is doing really, really well. I was actually just talking to Aaron yesterday. And he's only been live since the weekend. And so he's only been live for 3 days and has 3 bookings. So those bookings are all starting to roll in. Jared Rounsfeld is a game day property getting ready in Bloomington, Indiana. And so it is football season. The defending national champs, Jared just launched his game day property. We're loving these game day properties, having a lot of fun with him, with Vodacy Design and Mike's design team. Doing this one. So go check out all these guys' properties, from the high-rise condos in the downtown to the game day properties in Indiana and everything in between. We got beach properties. We got all kinds of stuff. So go check out how we're executing on the types of things that we talk about every single day here at Vodacy. Lots of different examples in today's show. So good job, Jake. I love having that many shout outs. Go ahead, Josh.
I want to touch on one thing, the luxe category and why I love it so much, right? Yeah. In a previous life, I owned nightclubs, right? And specifically in the big club days and the bottle service and all the things, we made our money from 11 p.m. to 2 a.m. Right, primarily 2 to 3 days a week, right? And there was no other days. That was when we made our money. And the VIP, they wanted real estate, they wanted the table, they wanted everyone to look at them and all this stuff. That's what the luxe category is on Airbnb. People go there to book and they like, I want to have something that I can tell everyone I have the best thing, I have the best toy, right? And the luxe category, man, if you're able to get into that and maintain that tag and pass their inspection stuff, you're given a clientele that expects to overpay. They want to overpay. Now, they're going to want a lot of service, right? They're going to want that bottle service, whatever they may be in your area. But congratulations to Dan, Claudia, Gabby, that whole crew down there. They're dominating it. We know coming down the pipeline, we have another big Tampa one coming in for Dan. We're hoping it's going to get up there with Lux as well. So we're pretty excited about that market.
Yeah, that's awesome. And you're exactly right. Good, pause on that. That's a really hard tag to get. And pretty amazing in all of Tampa that Dan and Claudia have 3 of the 5 Lux tags available. And I'm no doubt, I'm sure they'll get that fourth one. I bet they're going to be 4 out of 6 down there in that market because we know their properties. And we had a lot of fun in January this year. Early this year, we did a big full-on case study down there. We went down to all those properties, looked at them, looked at the performance, looked at the projections, looked at everything we did and what they did to execute that recipe down there and that blueprint down there. And it is paying off, and congrats on that. And you're exactly right. Those customers are expecting to, and it's not, I wouldn't even say overpay. They're expecting to pay top dollar because they're getting top dollar value. They're getting top dollar experience. They're like, every little detail is paid attention to. And so super excited for them down there. All right, let's dive into the topics. First topic, midterm topic that is getting floated out there. And what do we think it means for the housing market? Now, before I talk about any bills that are proposed or anything else, realize this is just a bill. It is not passed. It's not like they could talk about this and it could just be for headlines. When I say I have zero confidence, if I could have like a negative zero confidence or negative number confidence on anybody in Washington executing on anything at this stage in the game, it would be that would be my percentage. So my hopeful confidence level is a lot higher than that. And I wish that we could do some of those things, but I lose more and more faith of both sides of the aisle in Washington, the longer time goes on. However, I am not a fan of more taxes. And I think that this is something that should have been already talked about, but they're talking about two parts of this. One, adjusting capital gains or adjusting gains based on inflation. And so that's they're going to index capital gains to inflation. That means you'd only pay tax on the real gain above inflation, not the nominal paper gain, right? And so, when the dollar goes up over inflation and we get taxed on that inflation gain, they're saying, hey, let's not do that. I mean, when we look at our actual capital gains tax, I think one of the figures I just recently saw when I was doing some of this research is we're paying almost 50% capital gains when we don't index against inflation. That's a massive tax. I mean, they tax us every which way. And I think all of us are tired of it. The chances of them reducing that for us, again, not a lot of confidence there. I hope they do. I hope it's not just talking points, but it seems like everything in Washington is talking points at this stage, both sides of the aisle. Not taking shots of either side. I'm taking shots at Washington in general. I'd love to see a clean house there. This is the second part of that is the primary, the tax breaks on the primary home sales, which is right now you get, and this was back, I think this was put in place back in 1997. So 20 years or 30 years ago now, almost, where we're saying, okay, we're going to, if it's your primary home and you've lived in the home for two of the last 5 years and your primary residence, you get an exclusion on the capital gains. You don't have to pay capital gains. If you're an individual single person, up to $250,000 in gains. If you're a married couple, it's up to $500,000 in capital gains. Well, there's a lot of people who have a lot more than that gains in their house. They've lived in their home for a significant amount of time. And now all of a sudden they sell their primary home and they've got this big capital gains that they have to pay, right? And just from living in their home longer or longer term, and a lot of it's due to inflation. Home values have gone up, obviously, with appreciation. And so I'm a massive fan of this as well. They're talking about adjusting that up to $2 million. So it's a big jump. And I'd love to see that. And one of the things that I think it does on a couple different levels is one of the problems we're having in short-term or in the housing market, not just short-term rentals, in the housing market, residential housing market particularly, is there's nobody wants to sell their homes. Nobody's trading up right now. I was in the game back in the Great Recession of 2008, and that was primarily a housing problem. And that was a real struggle back then. But there was a lot of opportunity baked in during that time. And you could really take advantage of all that opportunity. This market seems even more challenging because it just feels like stale and stagnant. And one of the things why it's stale and stagnant is we don't have anything to look at. We don't have enough inventory to check out. There's nothing that's coming on the market. And there are some of these things we're talking about that could possibly be keeping some of these people on the sideline. And we see it all the time where people are kind of forced to buy something with the capital gains, where they're doing one of the ways to kind of kick the can forward with capital gains is a 1031 exchange. When you sell a property that has a lot of gains, you have the ability to go buy another investment and roll those gains into something else. And so a lot of investors, realize I'm talking about the investment side, not as much on the primary home side, but on the investment side, when they sell, sometimes you would like to have that money and put it back into the economy, go invest it somewhere else, look at some other opportunities. And that money is almost forced to go right back into a limited inventory market because of the time crunch you have on 1031. On the 1031 exchange. You've got 45 days after you sell property to identify what you're going to buy, 180 days to buy something. So we see what we call kind of forced purchases. You're forcing yourself to have to go purchase, or you're going to have to pay this big capital gains. If we start, for some of us long-term investors that we work in short-term rentals, but we say they're long-term investments, and we have these capital gains, and our gains are adjusted or indexed over in inflation, that's a lot lower amount of money that we're going to have to pay gains on. And ultimately that could be a different decision to keep some of that money in our pocket, put it back into the economy, look at different opportunities, whatever it is. And so I think that that's a good thing for the real estate market in general, when it comes to homeowners selling and moving up and not having to worry about paying a massive capital gains tax. Some people will, it seems kind of crazy. We always say, don't let the tax tail wag the investment dog or your purchasing dog if you're a homeowner. And if it makes sense to trade up and just pay those taxes and do it, sometimes on paper it makes sense, but just mentally, sometimes you're like, man, this is my house. I paid taxes on the money that I bought the house with. I paid taxes on the money that I paid the bills with the whole time. I paid taxes. I pay property taxes. I pay all these different things. Now I'm going to sell it and you want to tax me again. And it just feels overwhelming sometimes. And sometimes we draw a line in the sand and say, I'm not doing it. And so you have a lot of people, we need homes on the market. We need people to move up. We need kind of velocity in the real estate market. Maybe this helps. And so I think that those are some of the good things. Again, the reality is it's just a bill. It has to go through Congress. Maybe it even gets accepted. They can't seem to pass anything that 80% of us agree on. So I doubt that I think this is a fairly bipartisan type of a proposal, if you will. I think it does make sense for a lot of people. I think that, you know, the negative narrative I've seen is says this is helping the wealthy again. This is helping the people that have a lot of money. I completely disagree with that. The average homeowner in America has a net worth of like $400,000. The average renter has a net worth of like $10,000. And so it's like a 40x difference. The average homeowner is not the wealthy. And I think that the capital gains on your personal residence helps the average homeowner. I do think it helps, you know, get some money and velocity into the economy overall. But Josh, what are your takes on that? I don't think this is just a wealthy thing. But I also am not super, I'm not super optimistic that anything's going to happen with it.
You know, just to tie into what we do, so much of what we talk about and what I learned early on as an entrepreneur is like, there are things in taxes that you have to pay, but there are incentives and ways around a lot of those pieces. For the average person, the average W-2 earner who just goes through and gets crushed to dust on by the cogs, you know, being a cog in the wheel and the grind. I mean, 250 years ago, we went to war, a pretty famous war that we're known for, right? Over a tea tax.
2%.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So, I mean, like, you know, like you look at everything now and what the taxation looks like. I mean, like Benjamin Franklin is rolling over in his grave about it. You know, I'm not a fan. I pay an accountant a good amount of money to do everything I'm legally allowed to do. You know, and everything that comes out of Washington is just sewage. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. not a fan. I'm not a supportive. I would love some term limits, all those fun things to drain that swamp out, so to speak. I'm not speaking on either side. I think that the average person everywhere would agree with that. Not a lot more to say except for, you know, like burn it down, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm with you. great. This podcast is going to get shut down now because Josh is
just got shadow banned. There we go.
Yeah. We're shadow banned. We've been shadow banned before. We don't even talk. We're not even a political show. It's crazy. So that with this one might get shadow banned. But, yeah, you know, I think that, you know, the fact that they're even kind of admitting or even bringing up the conversation that inflation creates fake gains is something to pay attention to. They are fake gains. Inflation is fake gains, and we shouldn't be taxed on fake gains, right? Just because your asset went up on paper, the dollar got weaker the whole time you owned it, you didn't make nearly as much as the tax code is currently saying you did. And so conceptually indexing that capital gains to inflation does make some sense. So let's keep moving on. Let's see. Let's
cut that out.
Let's not try to get banned all the way today. You know what I'm saying? Maybe we should just spice it up a little bit. Maybe we should become a little bit more of a drain the swamp show. Who knows? If you like us talking about that stuff, just let us know. Maybe we'll throw more of that on there. Let's go to Airbnb. Airbnb says fall is about to explode. 60% of survey respondents say they're planning a weekend getaway this fall. Fall themed travel wish lists are growing this year compared to last, led by five key search terms. One, fall getaways, fall foliage, leaf peeping, apple picking, and fall road trips. Rather than planning extended vacations, travelers are opting for shorter trips that make the most of the season. And so the biggest trends in the fall, we love the fall. We're seeing across the board in a lot of our markets that fall season is becoming the peak season. If you've got any, you know, where you are, any of that fall foliage destinations, that is becoming a very, like, that's a massive a time frame, and it's a short period. We usually have a month period that we can capitalize on it, but it's a period that we can really get some massive gains on our properties. And so, it says that 90% of Gen Z survey respondents say small towns and under the radar destinations appeal to them this fall. New traveler trend taking a hold of fans is ground hopping. That means the practice of visiting as many stadiums, arenas, and venues as possible to check live event landmarks off the list. Nearly 70% of the survey respondents say the trend appeals to them. So, Josh, what do you think about that? I mean, I love to hear that. I've got one property in Blue Ridge, Georgia. We've got some here out west, and the fall is beautiful out here and out there. And so, you know, I know that we don't see a lot of leaves changing on the beach in those beach areas, but these other areas, you got some really nice options in the fall. Personally, fall is my favorite time in almost all of these areas. If you ever ask me over the last years is what my favorite time of year is, it is the fall. And it sounds like a lot of people would agree with that and have some big trips planned. And so You know, what are some of the things we can do to kind of prepare and get ready with our pricing, with our average stays, with all of those things that we can do to really maximize some of these properties in these areas that have the fall traveler?
No, when we first bought our first unit, the same time South Carolina, where we live at, started having a fall break. They didn't really have fall breaks before. It was like 1 day, 2 days. Now it's a full week, right? So you have a second spring break, right? So now the pricing, the demand, the drive to destinations, and where we are, it is still swimming weather. It's still in the 80, upper 80s, lower 90s, I mean, or 100s, wherever we are. It's still summertime for us. Fall is my favorite time as well. You know, I'm a huge football fans at our household. Go Birds. I'm going to drop that every time I can. And that's who we are. But in general, with fall, you know what I mean? Knowing your market, knowing what happens, knowing, say, I'm a drive-through destination. And if I know if I'm a drive-through destination and I'm near Atlanta, say Blue Ridge, Georgia, which is, you know, close to where, you know, Cherry Log, where your property is. When is Atlanta school district, when is their fall break? That's a spring break. That is a peak weekend for you. And it happens to be during fall foliage season. Right. So you're getting double. Right. And so, how, you know, your price labs or whatever should be picking up on that. But we're maximizing that months in advance because the parents are booking those trips like they would a spring break. Right. So if you're looking at October and it's August right now, you're like, wow, I booked a whole week in October and your rates weren't reflecting that, you missed, because I guarantee it was a fall break maneuver. And, you know, I don't know how it is over there in where you are in Utah. That has kind of spread throughout the Southeast to where our season kind of used to end in Labor Day. But now school starts the first week of August. So August becomes more of a doldrum time. We get to start picking back up in September. Then we have a really big October. And then we start slowing back down again, you know, November, December, back into March again. So those changes have been relatively new for at least for where we are over the last 4 years. Yeah. Right. And you see that through historicals. You can go back and see those numbers. In my October, if I look at October now, and obviously inflation, everything, you go back 4 or 5 years, that number was a very different number. Right. Yeah. So we can see that and keep track of what's the finger of the pulse of your area, your neighborhood, where your customers are coming from. That should be an ABC. But yeah, fall is our favorite time. I'm excited for this fall. We have a lot of things coming up. So we're excited for it.
Yeah, I would agree with that. We always feel like the season starts. We've always kind of, summertime is obviously peak season for a lot of people. And summertime typically is bookmarked with Memorial Day and Labor Day, right? But what really starts the seasons is spring break and fall break. Those are the real bookmarks, in my opinion. You do have a bit of a drop. So you have spring breaks always starting sometime in that March timeframe. April, sometimes they go into that a little bit. Then you have a little bit of a slow in May, and then boom, we're back into the summer. And same with right now, we've got all the way to Labor Day, and then we're have a little bit of a slowdown right now because school's starting, and then we're right back into the fall foliage season and that fall break season. So lots of, and those are actually peak times that you can really be capitalizing. Like if you're not paying attention to pricing, you're not paying attention to, you know, what's going on, you get really excited in June or July that you booked a week in October, like you said, and you're like, oh, nice, I got a week in October and the summer's already over. You're like, hey, you just booked a week, one of your peak earning weeks for maybe not what you should have if that pricing wasn't adjusted correctly. And so it is, I know for us in Blue Ridge, our Blue Ridge property specifically, that month of October, that's those weekends in October are our highest nightly rate weekends throughout the whole year. And so more than 4th of July, more than Memorial Day, Labor Day, any of the holidays, those 4 weekends in October for us are our highest nightly rate across the board. Out west, it's a little different. We have beautiful falls out west, but the foliage doesn't stay as long. Like we usually, and it's a little bit less predictable depending on how dry of a season it is and all that kind of stuff. And where, you know, those aspens and stuff will pop for a week and then they're gone. And it still can be really, really pretty, but it doesn't last nearly as long as we see more in the southeast or the northeast. So you don't see this massive jump all season long or a month long, like out west in the mountains, as you necessarily would in like some of these other areas. Like the top areas are up in like the northeast and the southeast, up in Tannersville, New York, that's the Catskills, Blue Ridge, Georgia, down in the Adirondacks there. And then, the Smokies, obviously, you've got Maine, Camden, Maine, up in the northeast again, that New Hampshire, Maine area, like down in the southeast, and the whole area that you have a full month of fall travelers, and you really need to take advantage of it and set those properties up, because typically October can be a really big month for a lot of people in those areas. Okay. Next topic, regulations out, tax hikes in. So I don't know that regulations are full on out, but we are definitely seeing some of the municipalities jumping on board and really increasing these hospitality and lodging taxes massively, like going from, you know, we're seeing 200-500% increases in 200-300% increases in lodging taxes, hospitality taxes. And I don't, you know, this is becoming something that is very easy to pass because they're not complete bans. They're not license caps, but they're steep occupancy tax. And that when they go, that's easy to pass on the ballot box because they're saying, hey, listen, these people are coming in. We need to charge these taxes. We're not going to ban it, but we're going to make it pretty. I mean, your hospitality taxes in some of these areas are nearing 20% of your booking. And so it's a massive tax in some of these areas. Broomfield, Colorado just increased theirs 275%. Missoula, Montana, they're talking about doubling it on the hospitality tax would double on medium price second homes and short-term rentals. And so it's a massive tax across the board in these hospitality tax. And so at what tax percentage does this become a problem? You know, this is very much a pass-through tax. So a lot of times it doesn't necessarily come out of our bottom line as an investor. But at some point, the consumer is going to look at this and say, I don't know that I want to go there. I'm paying this much in taxes to go stay at this property. Jake had a question saying, should we underwrite at the current tax percentage or do you have to add a buffer? Underwriting it, again, it doesn't really affect it on paper because it's a pass-through. The guest is paying it. However, we something to pay attention to because at some point, the guest could say, you know, I've had enough. Like we just talked about at the front of this, we're getting so taxed to death. It feels like on every single place you turn around. And at what point does the consumer say, yeah, I'm not playing that game. I don't want to go there. I don't know if they do. Honestly, I don't know that there's an answer to that. My gut would say the consumer wants to go, they're going to figure out how to pay for it. Right. And so, but I don't know, if that's really going to affect it or not. I do think other markets are going to follow this. I don't know what's your thoughts on this, Josh? I go back and forth. I think I could make an argument both ways of whether this affects the consumer or not.
I mean, it's all, if you're running it the way most people do, it's a pass through, right? It's not me that's paying, it's you, it's the guest, right? And at some point the guest is going to say no, but no one's going to recognize that until tourism numbers go down across the board. And then it's going to look back to why, what's happening. And in certain states, and we know which ones they are, the taxation is pretty ridiculous, right? Yeah. But if the consumer's still continuing to pay it and you're still hitting your bottom line, great. I think it goes back to a lot of what we were saying a few minutes ago. Where is this tax going?
Yeah.
Right? What is it doing? You know what I mean? Again, I don't want to jump back to the nightclub stuff. We had a hospitality tax we paid for every drink that was sold. Right. And it went to pay for things that was not hospitality related. It went to pay for deficits in other parts of the budget. You know what I mean? And it was like, why are we paying this? Yeah. Right. I mean, shouldn't this been covered somewhere else? And it was so, I mean, like, it followed the money, but in general, it's just another tack on until a change happens somewhere higher up. It's going to keep getting pushed down the pipeline. I don't think it's going to affect people wanting to travel. It would have to be pretty extreme. It just makes the prices but it's against the board. It's against hotels. It's against everything. If you're being segmented out, this is where we see a lot of the regulations going, where a lot of the legal challenges have came back through a lot of the states is like, hey, we're singling you out as a short-term rental. We're making you charge this extra tax, but hotels aren't getting it or long-term rentals aren't getting it. You're being singled out and saying, hey, because you are this, we're gonna essentially discriminate against your property, these extra fees. Will that challenge across extra states? I would love to see how those increases look in certain markets over a 2-3-4 year span. Has there been a challenge and where that's gone?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that you're right. It'll be hard to tell how much it affects the consumer because naturally, if it starts to affect the consumer too much, investors will start to lower their nightly rates. So the overall cost is the same. So it really, even though it's a pass-through expense, I think ultimately it does, if it continues to trend this direction and those taxes trend so high up, it ultimately does affect our pocketbooks because the consumer has, let's say they have $3,000 to spend on this trip And they don't like, it has to be for the whole booking, right? They need $3,000 to book. If taxes keep going up, and we need to still keep that kind of price where the consumer's comfortable, even though that taxes are a pass through, what we do is we take a haircut on the booking fee. That will naturally happen in an open marketplace like that. And where people are setting their own prices, we see it where people feel like that's where they have to compete even when the Airbnb fee went up, right? The Airbnb fee, they were on the split fee. They were used to paying 3%. Now it goes up to 15.5%. It's a massive cut to their bottom line. And a lot of people didn't even have the guts to raise their prices on that. They said, well, we'll just eat it. Right. So it's something you have to watch and something to think about. A lot of these are in blue states. I mean, it is what it is. You follow where this kind of stuff happens. You will find that the higher taxes are typically in more Democrat areas. And they put these big taxes on because, like you're saying, they've been getting challenged on, can they shut out short-term rentals altogether? And they're saying, okay, we don't, we have these tax. Now, the argument on the surface is, well, listen, and I agree with this, by the way. I agree that there's some of these markets are small markets, low, like they don't have a lot of infrastructure. They have, you know, they're one stoplight type towns sometimes. And they've got, you know, three cops that work there. And then all of a sudden, the summertime, you know, they're used to having 1,000 or 2,000 full-time residents. And in the summertime, it grows to 40,000, right? Because it's a small mountain lake town or something. Like my very first short-term rental was in Bear Lake, Utah. It's a town like that. It's, you know, you have 1,000 people that live there. And in the summertime, you're 40 or 50,000 people on the weekends. And so it's a massive drain on, like, you can't have three cops doing that, right? So they do have to invest. And like you said, you got to see where the money's going. And if it truly is going and they need that increase in the tax to actually, you know, hire seasonal help and hire seasonal, up for the full infrastructure, whether it's cops, whether it's first responders, whatever it is. And maybe they have to have some medical facilities that have to be built and some clinics or whatever it is that tax goes to. Okay, I can buy into that argument, but most of the time these taxes were set up in a way to cover that anyways. And now it feels like most things do when it comes to taxes. It just feels like a money grab. It's like, I mean, I have zero confidence that anybody in government, whether it's small city municipalities all the way up to Washington, I don't feel like that they're that confident to spend money. I feel like we could probably figure this out on our own as consumers, and the open market, like I'm a capitalist at heart, just let us figure it out. And I think the free markets will figure it out. But I understand the argument, but when you, like to your point, when you follow the money, it feels like it's going to be some of these areas are just like, hey, we can do this. So let's do it because we can type of a situation, not because we need to. And I think that if they need to, let's make sure the money's going to that stuff, right? To the infrastructure, to the first responders, to the people that have to come in and actually police this while the city goes from 1,000 residents to 40,000 temporary residents, right? And there are markets like that. And the argument can definitely be made that we need that money to go invest into the, you know, keeping everything, you know, the making sure that everything operates as it should infrastructure-wise. And so I think there's but a lot of times the first line argument makes sense, and then you follow the money and it's not getting spent in those ways anyways. And so, or there was plenty of money to do that in the first place. You didn't need to have a 300% hike on the tax because the money was there for you to do it. You're just not spending it efficiently or incorrectly and or at all, right? So I think that's something to watch. But I mean, at the end of the day, it's going to hit us as investors, even though it's a pass-through expense. And I think sometimes when things are pass-through expenses, we ignore them as investors and we don't get as involved as we probably should with the local municipalities and really talk about, like, let's track the money. Let's see where it's spending. Let's look at some of these studies, force them to do the same studies they do. Like when I do a development, I have to go in and I have to show what kind of a drain on the infrastructure. If I'm going to be too much of a drain, I have to build that infrastructure in when it comes to sewer and water and all those different things. And why don't we have these municipalities show us why they need those increases, where the money's being spent, all that stuff, and kind of demand that from the investor side. But since it's a pass-through, we get a little bit lazy and we don't do that. And I think it's important for us as investors to make sure we're involved in the areas that we're investing in, and let our voices be heard, whether it's through organizations, whether it's individually, whether it's through management companies, but we need to have a voice in some of these conversations. And I think we kind of ignore that at times when we're like, well, if it goes up 300%, the guest is paying that anyways. At the end of the day, it's going to affect all of us as investors. All right. What else do we have? Let's see. One more positive. Let's see. Do we have another positive? Okay. This is sort of positive. We'll end on this one. Josh, you and I are going to have a bit of a debate. I'll take whatever side you don't want to take. And so
I know where we're going with it. And I think we're kind of
take one side, I'll argue the other.
All right.
AI photos in your listings on the OTAs. So people, animals, colored edits, words, even objects like burgers on a grill, all of those things are getting very, very popular when it comes to the photo shoots anymore. We've been doing lifestyle photo shoots for a long time. You've been doing them. You own a company that does them, and we've been big proponents of them for a long time. Right now, we're seeing AI kind of overtake some of these photo shoots. And so we've always had people in our photo shoots. Now we have a lot of people. We're seeing a lot of people in photo shoots. Historically, they were few and far between. And if done correctly, I actually thought they were done well. But there were certain markets like Joshua Tree or some of those markets where the talent pool is down there, right? And you've done photos with local talent agencies, with people. And done correctly, I actually think they can be done well. Now we're seeing people all over the place because they're fake people, right? They're AI people. And they're real pretty people and they look really good and they're doing exactly what they're supposed to do that the models had to do in the past. And you had to get a really good talent agency to do it and pull it off. But so are the OTAs going to crack down? Are they going to require or have a walkthrough styled video along with photos soon that kind of, so you can say, hey, listen, this is not fake, because when is too much fakeness too much? And so I'll let you, since you are the photo shoot guy anyways, what side are you on? Yes to AI photo shoots, AI in your photo shoots and using it, or no, you think we're going too far?
I love this conversation. If you had asked me 5 years ago, and just a little bit of background, I come from a media director background. We've had the opportunity to work with some major brands, Royal Caribbean, a lot of resorts, hotels, stuff like that. When you look at these major brands, where they have people and where they do not, right? If you are doing a Royal Caribbean shoot, right? Icon of the Seas is going to launch, right? What happens is that ship goes to sea with a full staff, all its performers, a media team, and then influencers, models, whatever, right? And those influencers, models, they get paid and they get free food, free drinks. They have certain outfits they have to wear, right? You see them go through all the things, all the performances you see, the Cirque du Soleil, all those things are happening, and they reshoot it over and over and over and over. And this becomes the media package for that ship. Right. Where you rarely see these photos at or videos outside of like maybe a reel is in intimate spaces, in your bedrooms, in your shower, stuff like that, because the consumer doesn't want to see you in their space. Yeah. Right. And that's the same in with Airbnb, VRBO. But also we crack down to Airbnb. We go to Airbnb. Airbnb's terms of service clearly prohibits putting anything that doesn't exist or never happened. So if you take a photo shoot and you go add AI people to the photo shoot, you are against terms of service because that never happened. And guess what? AI recognizes AI. When you put that on social media, when you put it on Facebook and you put it on Instagram, and I'll get into the social media piece in a minute. When you put that on Instagram, guess what comes up? There's a little label, AI generated, AI involved, whatever it is for that platform, because the AI scraper says, hey, this is AI, right? And Now when I see it, I'm immediately questioning. We are in a trust recession. You say it all the time. Right. And so if you're saying, hey, I'm going to put these AI people in there, people are going to love it. Who told you that? Right. Like go look at a lot of your top listings in any market and tell me which ones have AI people in them. Right. And the answer is probably close to zero because they don't convert. It's easier for a photographer who's not able to stage, who doesn't want to take the time, who doesn't want to stay for twilight or light the fire and do all the hard stuff to say, hey, AI can do it easier. And I mean, just we have yet to see the easy button work in anything. Right. And so just from that point of view, not saying that because it's what we sell, but in general, it's like, hey, you're taking the easy button. The consumer sees that they know it's fake. The OTA sees it, they know it's fake. You keep doing that and tell me which one of your listings are the top of the market. right? And that'll be, I'd love to get the social media piece and where people get confused when we do photo shoots. People ask all the time, they're like, hey, can we get people in our photos? I'm like, we can generate it for you. Easy, and it'll look great, but I would not use them on the OTAs. If you want to use it on your website, if you want to use it on your messaging, if you want to use it on your social media, whatever it is, fantastic, whatever. But in general, we would not advise you doing this. Now, if you want us to hire actors or talent, as we call it, if you want us to bring talent in, that's going to massively bring up a budget, because it's not just saying, hey, go stand over there. Not everyone's very photogenic. Not everyone's face looks the same when you take a picture. They can't hold a pose. And someone who's as talented is able to hold a pose. And you'll see that, like, we open in a pizza box. I'm opening a pizza box in a video. That could be 20 takes to get it done right with three or four people, right? And the timeline massively increases. And so there's a lot more moving pieces there that I see the finished product, but I don't know what goes into doing it in real life. And I know the AI is the easy button. I'm pretty anti it. I think that you'll continue to see crackdowns on it. And I think the people that are profiting off of that are going to be stuck holding a lot of angry customers over the next like 12 to 18 months.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to take the contrarian view of this. And I say, well, listen, if I'm not misleading people, one, if I spend a lot of money on this property and we want to articulate exactly what it is that that consumer is going to get, and I want to use AI to enhance like that experience, like I talk about experience all the time. Like if I'm going to, I spent money on a speakeasy, or I spent money on a hot tub, and I want to show somebody, I spent money on a nice grill, for example, all these different things that we're talking about where we're spending money on. And I want to show the guest, like I always say, hey, listen, sell the experience, sell the sizzle, sell what they're going to be doing there. Don't leave anything to their imagination. And AI has gotten so good that now I can show them that. And I can show them that better than you just said, how hard it is to actually show them that in real life, right? Not everybody can do it. It's very expensive. It's very time consuming. And now with AI, I can go out there and I can say, hey, listen, take my property. Here's a picture of the property. And I want somebody grilling at this grill. I want somebody sitting around this fireplace. I want somebody, you know, looking at the sunset. And what's wrong with that if I'm not misleading what that actually is going to be? A lot of surveys show that consumers, about 70% of consumers or 60% of consumers, pretty neutral on it. They don't care. They don't care if it's AI. They don't really care. They don't trust the brand less. Jake is showing me it makes the 31% say it makes them trust the brand less. So that's overwhelmingly, most people don't care. 7% say they actually like it. 60% say they're neutral. And so if I can do a good job showing, using AI to show the consumer what it, the experience of my property would be like without misleading them, but doing it at a very, like a high level, almost like the perfect actresses and the perfect actors and the perfect models and the perfect grill and the perfect ribeye and everything else. What's wrong with that? The perfect sunset, right? I mean, I guess that when we're saying if what we're selling is the experience and AI can help me articulate that experience, what's wrong with that? And you made a lot of really good points there on the trust recession and all of those different things. Now, what, like if I dive into that and that's my mindset and I'm saying that, what would you say to that?
You know, I hearing that from you is makes me smile.
I know you're laughing because you know that's not my take. I know. I have a much better argument on the other side.
Yeah, I love that it got to be that way and not me having to say it, because I'd be like, so they're like eating crow, right? Yeah. But yeah, you know, I mean, but it's the type of thing is like, you know, hey, you know, what was the phrase we covered a couple of weeks ago? IRL in real life. Yeah. Like, in real life economy, right? Yeah. And you see movies like what was that one? Good Luck, Have Fun, Don't Die. I thought, I don't watch a lot of movies. I enjoyed staying up for 2 hours for that or whatever, right? And it talks about people being like, hey, I'd rather be in this fake world, this Ready Player One world, because the rest of the world around me sucks, right? It's too hard. It's too hard to get things done. I have financial issues. I have emotional issues. I have, you know, relationship issues, whatever that is. So I'm going to go live in this thing, right? And that's where I want to be, you know? And I mean, maybe that's me wanting to go more off grid and further away from those people and those things. But man, it just does not sell me. It turns me off. It turns me away. And if it's like, hey, this is the perfect sunset you're going to see every single day, then AI generated it. And I get there and I don't see that sunset, I'm disappointed, right? Here's this perfect steak you're going to have on this grill. And the reality is you seared it for too long. right? And it's like all these little things that aren't real, that aren't really what you're going to experience, aren't really what you're going to, you know, have happen to you there. You know, we enjoy the sunshine because of the rain type mentality, right? I really just am very anti it. Now, I'm sure that as the technology gets better, you know, and it makes CGI better and all those things. But in general, from what we're selling that experience, we're selling that real life experience. I'm just not about, I think, you know, hey, if you spend an extra, hey, I don't want to stay till twilight to light the fire and get pictures of the stuff, I'm just gonna Photoshop it and AI it all in. Yep. I mean, but you're still charging the same prices, right? If anything, you're ripping the customer off for what you're trying to sell.
Yeah. Okay. So now debate's over. We're gonna get Sean's real take.
Okay.
And my take is very similar to the opposite of the approach that I just debated, right? I actually don't think that this is something that is really good to do. I think it is fake. I think too much fakeness is seen by the consumer. Where I take my biggest direction from is your biggest brands, the people who spend billions of dollars on advertising and everything else, and they're still using real people. In fact, most of the AI ads for the Super Bowl actually flopped, that people didn't like them as much. We want to see real, and we want to see authentic, and we want to see what's really going on. Now, we do go out for 3 or 4 days or 2 days, and we get the real sunset, and we want to see the real burgers on the grill. But I do want to sell that experience. I think that's super important. But the easy button of AI, in my opinion, one, like you mentioned it, Josh, I don't even know of one top property that it has all the AI stuff in there. The consumer is very, very, they're very skeptical, I guess is the best word, when they start to see that much AI. And a lot of these properties are just too overdone. They're too soft. Even though, like, I've seen them, they're like, well, that's a real picture, and we just added this stuff into it. Well, the realness actually looks fake, right? The realness, I'm looking at photos, Jake, even with some of our members, I think it's too much. And now the stats that I showed you and talking about were real. It says 61% of consumers are neutral on it. They don't really care. Only 30% actually trust you less. So play the odds. You're saying, okay, well, maybe I just play the odds, but I'm more of a, let's look at, like, one, I always go with what our gut is. When I look at something real versus fake, it's obvious. You can, even as good as AI gets, it's pretty obvious when things are over edited and over AI'd. And I want to see real stuff. And if I'm not willing to go spend the money, like you said, take the cruise ship out, have the actor and actresses on there, the models, the influencers, everything else, and have everything done, that I'm actually shooting it all and doing the real takes with professionals to make it look right and have it look real, then we do what we call is we set a lot of scenes. Like, we're going to have a lot of scenes that are set. Like, I just walked away from the party because it's easier to get a good picture of the pizza box than the person that's opening the pizza box with their reaction, right? And so, but it needs to be real. And I am a big believer that you got to be authentic. You can't, I shouldn't say you can't. I don't believe you should put too much of this AI filters and make it so perfect, because even though you're taking pictures of the real property a lot of times and you don't think you're misleading, that property does not look the same when you walk in. You want your guest to walk into that property and think it looks as good on the very minimum side and better on the better side, right? And that's one of the things we pride ourselves at Vodacy on, is how many times people say, holy crap, this is exactly like the photos look, or I walked in and this is real. We have a property, one of our game day properties down at LSU that Billy and Amanda launched. And right when they launched it, it was so done. Like, a lot of our Vodacy design is so immersive. It's so different. It's so, just people don't believe it sometimes. And they have one of those types of properties, and they saw it, and they were getting asked all the time before people would book it, hey, are these AI photos, or is this AI generated, or like that artwork doesn't seem like that would be real, right? And they had to answer that question a lot. Well, then their first three reviews came in, and all the very first thing the reviews were mentioning is, guys, this is amazing. This is exactly like the photos look. This is not AI. This is real. And they didn't have to ask him to do that. Those are the reviews that came in, because people were so, like, almost surprised that, holy crap, this is what it looks like. And then they don't have to answer that question anymore. And now, boom, the property just books like crazy. And I don't want somebody to have the exact opposite reaction where these AI photos are taken. Then I walk in and I'm like, yeah, I can see where they doctored that one up. And I can see what that one, that was actually wah, that. Wah, wah. Yeah, right. That was exactly. It's like, it's a downgrade from what I thought I was walking into. And even if I knew that it was AI and I was still okay booking it. And then I still walk in and I'm like, okay, not as bad as I thought, or it gets pretty close. Like, I don't want that reaction. And I think that when we have seen that reaction on some of the biggest brands, and they're going right back to let's advertise real stuff. Like, let's actually look at real stuff. And making sure that the AI is not too overwhelming, because we appreciate talent. We appreciate real, we appreciate something that took a while to do and set up. We don't really appreciate something that was just a click of a button. And even though it's cool and it has a lot of places in our advertising and our photos, I don't think it does. I actually think you're going to have the OTAs start to crack down on it, because I think that the overuse of it is going to force them to crack down on it. And the more and more people start to put those types of photo shoots out there, I think the more likely the crackdown comes harder and faster. So that's my
thing. I would like to see the reviews to where it says, oh, we're so happy this place had AI photos. We wouldn't have booked it without these perfect
nobody
models.
Nobody says that. Yeah, you want that review that says, holy crap, guys, this is real. This is what it looks like. This property looks exactly like the photos. That's what you want them saying, right? And so it was, we want to make sure that we're doing that and giving that the wow factor right when they open the door, not the, like you said, the blah, blah, blah factor, right? you know, so, all right, guys, we'll wrap it up for the day. Josh, appreciate you joining me. Jake, as always, thanks for all the topics and the research behind the scenes. Guys, we appreciate you joining us. We know your time is valuable. If you got any value out of this, our goal is to help you walk into this game with your eyes wide open. If that's what it's doing and you know somebody else would like to be a part of these shows, please share it, like it, give it a thumbs up on review it, whatever platform you're watching or listening on. Those things really do help us. You didn't listen to any ads when you watch this show or listen to this show, either one, because we don't run sponsorships. The only way it grows is organically through you guys sharing it, liking it, and getting the word out there for other short-term rental investors that would like to be part of these conversations. So those things are very appreciated. It is always shocking to me, even those of you that listen on a regular basis and don't subscribe, but you know, we'd love the subscribe button as well on whatever platform that, you know, lots of our listeners don't even subscribe to the show that are regular listeners, and we see the stats behind it. So give us a subscribe on those platforms as well, because when you do that, the platforms will share it with other people like you, right? The algorithm will find other people that they think would be like to be a part of these shows. And those things are very appreciated from us if you're willing to do that with your time. So final, most important thing, every single episode, twice a week, I remind you to pick that one thing you can do today, start building that life you don't want to take a vacation from. Cheers, my friends.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution Podcast. Share this with other people you think need to hear about it. And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. Hey Grace, is there a website? Yes! For more amazing content and expert advice, visit Vodacy.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.